Thank you, you're ready to start. To welcome you to the city council meeting of the city of Cedar Hills. It's Tuesday, May 4th, 2021, at 7:04 PM. We are meeting at the Community Recreation Center, and our first order of business tonight is the pledge led by Councilmember Ellsworth, after which the invocation will be given by Councilmember Gates.
All right, please join with me and say the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our Father in heaven, we are deeply grateful this evening to be gathered together as a city council and city leaders and staff. And we're grateful for the opportunity to participate in the government of our city and to be able to help make good choices for our residents. We ask that we might be guided in ways that will be pleasing to thee and to those that benefit from our efforts. And we pray for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you. Okay. We have our second item is the approval of the meeting's agenda. If anyone would like to make that motion.
We're adding an item, right?
Oh, yes, thank you, Ben. We are adding an item. We're gonna add item number 11 that we're gonna go into a closed session at the end of our agenda items. So I'll add that and then we will approve. So I'll make a motion that we approve the agenda with the addition of a closed session. Councilmember Smith, can I have a second? Councilmember Ellison, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. We now have public comments. Public comment portion, is there anyone? Nobody signed up for public comments? Okay, thank you. Now we are going to move on to the consent agenda. The iconic consent agenda is a resolution 0-05-04-2021A and an assignment to members of city council to the parks colleagues. About park program. Okay. All right, so if I can get a motion on the consent agenda.
I will make the motion to approve the consent agenda.
Could I make a note there that for some reason I've left off on the voting on that resolution?
Okay, I'll fix it.
Where did I see it there?
I always double check those before they go for signature.
No, but I did say the vote.
Okay, got it.
Okay, thank you. Let's go again. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, fantastic. All right, we're going to move on to city reports and business, starting with the
thank you, Mayor. Just as in the Recreation Department, we've hired Carson Mitchell to replace Jen Goodman as our new Recreation Coordinator. He'll begin next Monday. We're excited to have him join our team. Soccer, teen soccer, tot soccer are now halfway through the spring season. So far, everything's gone great, so we're excited to have that program up and running. And our golf course continues to be performing at high levels. And we're getting a lot of great feedback from our clientele on Hole 10, the renovations that were down there as part of the PG Mill Ditch project. And as you can see, the initial phase of our remodel in this building is complete, and we love the results, and we've gotten really great feedback from many of the clientele. They like what they've seen. The last day for spring cleanup is this Saturday, May 8th. It's at St. Andrews. For those residents that miss it or are unable to attend or can't get there, the city does offer 2 free dump passes each year to residents, so I know people may reach out to you, just inform them of the dump passes. And then we have the fiber RFP that is active and out. We're expecting bids by this Friday. And at that point, we will commence with the fiber blue ribbon committee to start evaluating those proposals. And then finally, if you hear questions or comments on the chat room or anywhere else on social media, the splash pad opens on Memorial Day, not earlier than that.
So. What? Can I ask what? There's some torn up grass there in front of the pickleball course. Do you know what that is?
I think they're doing some landscaping.
Those pavilions are going?
Footings for pavilions, yeah.
There's some smaller shaped pavilions that are going.
We saw some orange cones. I didn't go down and investigate it, so I'm like,
they've been having a hard time getting concrete.
Hey, join the construction world right now. Like, try 7 days out in advance.
Yeah.
Best.
That's all.
Okay.
Yes.
Perfect.
I don't have anything right now.
Okay.
Yes, I would like to report on my my attendance at the Utah League of Cities and Towns in St. George. Since I was the only member from our team, I have to say it was probably the best one I've ever attended, and I've attended like three, I think, now. And it was very informative. I hope, if nothing else, you would go at least when they post it, when Utah League posts it, the keynote speaker of the opening ceremony was just fantastic. Arthur Brooks, known author and Harvard professor. But it was very appropriate for the kind of turmoil we're in as a country and how there's so much hate and kind of animosity that doesn't need to be there, really. And he addressed it in a way that really, it got to me. So I think you might want to listen to that. It's probably 20, 30 minutes if they ever get it posted up. That's by far. Apparently Jenny was there. I saw a post that she had posted and said she really liked it, but I never saw her. And then the closing was, we had our governor there, and it was, he had some really good things about our state's doing great. And just so you know, and I know Charles probably knows this, but the governor pointed out, and several of the breakout sessions I went to, there is a lot of money coming our way from Biden administration. It's a lot, and so we need to be prepared to spend it wisely, so because it's coming.
We've already been talking about it.
So I mean, it's not like it's not going to come.
No, it's.
It's been appropriated, and it's a lot of money.
We have some ideas that when, obviously staff's not going to just go spend that money, but we're going
to
run that by council.
We need to figure out how to spend it wisely.
I think we've got some good ideas of where it can be put to good use.
Long-term stuff. If our grandkids are going to be paying for this for the next 30 years, let's spend it so wisely.
Thank you. I was disappointed. I was telling you earlier, the live stream for that keynote address didn't work. So I heard on the news on the way over here that we have reached the threshold, the number of vaccinations to be able to eliminate COVID restrictions, except for kids wearing masks K through 12 and testing for school sports. So whatever that means, I'm excited about it.
And I've heard, except for state offices.
And state offices are going to continue to work. But I, on my COVID call on Monday, we were talking about city celebrations, and the Utah County Health Department has convinced that by the time our city celebrations happen, we won't be having these kinds of restrictions for mass gatherings. And at first, they were talking about tracing, if anybody got sick, and how do you trace people at a parade? You know, let people know. Person you're standing near tested positive, but they think those restrictions will be eliminated. So it looks good for our family festival. I'm super excited about the family festival. So I actually don't have anything else to report. Councilmember Smith?
Yeah, so I'm on the Central 911 committee, and they did their appreciation. And so we went down, the mayor and I went down and took them some donuts and some Cedar Hill swag. And I'm happy to report they were inundated with appreciation. They had food, treats, and all sorts of things. So I was really happy to see that they were being appreciated. I know St. Mary Fort went down, their Fort Police went down, the fire took a turn too. I saw you guys on the Google Sheet. So it was packed. The Google Sheet where they had to sign up was packed, and it looked like they were really feeling the love. So that was really nice of their work in our community. So
in that section is item number 7, a review and action public hearing on an adoption, on the adoption of the tentative fiscal year budget, July 1st, 2021 through June 30th, 2022. Mr. Lowe will present.
Thanks. Thanks for having me tonight. So my plan is to go over the funds that we haven't discussed yet, and then we can circle back and go over the any questions you might have on the whole budget. So first of all, we haven't talked about golf yet. I wish Greg was here. So I'll just get my advice from you. So you can see our total fees were in the 700s until 2020 last year when we had a big boom. April, May, June really made a difference, over 200,000 more. Today I found out they did 131 for April, which for next year's budget, our next year's budget is higher than we've normally budgeted, but it'll only be like $5,000 less with 2 months to go. So we're doing pretty good on revenues. What you can see, the years that we generally have a deficit is as we reinvest into the golf course, capital improvements. Our operations generally have been close to zero most years. It's a little varies. Last year was the first year we didn't invest in capital outlay, and we had an operational. We were operationally positive, $107,000. So that was good, but we have a lot of projects this year. This is another to say, how have we done through March? Record-breaking. Last year was record-breaking. We were over 200,000 better than any other year you can see last year. And this year, we're almost 200,000 ahead of that before April started. So that's good, revenue-wise, right? We like that. April was slightly down compared to last year. April's the rainiest month on the calendar, so you should expect some days to be down. That's just normal. Normally we were getting, I think Greg said, 59,000 in April, and we got 131 still. Last year we got 145, I think. So, still more than double, historically. Here's a little comparison. The next smallest city that has a golf course around us is Payson. For whatever reason, their financial statements, they showed the revenue balance sheet, but their cash flow statement was missing this last year. So I just kind of took their total receipts from revenues. But all the golf courses have done pretty well. They went up 300,000 last year in revenue. They invested, it looked like, around 600,000 into their golf courses last year. So that is something a lot of the cities are doing, is reinvesting into their courses, either in, you know, improving their clubhouses or buying equipment. Just FYI, they don't show their financials anymore, but each of these cities contribute $240,000 for their operations and debt service. So a total of $720,000 is contributed by these three cities each year. So, for anybody. So, some highlights. Like I said, revenue's way up so far. We have a fund balance projected at the end of the year to be around 500,000 for this fund. When I started here, we were at negative 2 million, so that's good. It's a lot better. We have a reserve for rainy days now. So, capital outlay plan for this year, besides practice ring and other improvements around the clubhouse, we have a bridge renovation, a tractor loader, top dresser, and a blower. Most of our carts are only a year old. We're not expecting a lot of repairs on those. And then same wages and benefits as the other employees. Our golf carts, because we require automatic braking, are generally more expensive, significantly more for that kind of, and that's just what happens.
Hello!
Wow. That looks nice. It's
coming from downstairs.
Okay. So, we're still planning on transferring 100,000, which is historically low. We transferred 100,000 this year. So, yes, it still requires a subsidy, so I'm going telling people there's no subsidy for the golf course, because that's false. But it's historically low. And per acre, we've talked about this before, compared to a park, it's much cheaper. We have about 50 acres of golf course that people enjoy the open space for, and I think we're getting close to around 50 on our parks with the new Pocahontas Park. So, if I was to say how much do we now pay to maintain our parks, it's not exact, but it's around 250,000. So golf courses are our golf course is cheaper than all the other parks, but it's, you know, more people use the parks. So there's a trade-off there. Our outstanding debt, someone always usually asks, so that's there. At 4.1 million in debt.
Where is that one? Where's the debt?
It's the third line down. So. And that goes through 2035. Each year we levy $306,000 to pay towards the debt, and we use also motor vehicle fees we collect related to that to help fund the full amount. Our debt service each year is around, $348,000, $350,000.
So, what's the term on the, I always get that wrong, people ask that one time, I always say 30-34, but you said 30-38?
No, 35.
35, okay.
So 34, 35, I think it overlaps that year.
And are you saying it's always 306 every year?
We just levy 306. The actual debt service is around 350. And then we contribute. I transferred in like 50,000 a few years ago to keep the levy down. And then we also collect about 30,000 in motor vehicle fees that are related that help pay for it. But that's not what our residents are paying for motor vehicle fees. That's just collected from the whole county and allocated based on your levy. So their direct contribution is 306, the residents.
But over the last 6 years, what about the new homes that have been built?
So
it should go up proportionally because you probably got.
What happens is I send a request to the county and I say I only want 306.
I see. That's what you're keeping it through.
And then everyone's portion should be smaller.
Yeah.
based on the number of businesses and residents that live in. Unless your house doubled in value compared to your neighbors. So, okay. Okay, any questions on golf? Lots happening. Lots of good things, and we're trying to make it better. Capital projects. Some of those are related to golf, some are other areas. Building improvements. This building benefited from some of that this year. There may be others. Right now, I just have $100,000 set aside for potential improvements that could be here. It could be a public safety building, bam, when the fire people eventually leave. Or if there's a large repair that's needed there that was unexpected, then we'd use that funding for that. Driving range, we already talked about that tonight. But that would incorporate any improvements to any practice facilities around here would, that money could be used for, based on our earlier discussion. Heritage Park, I keep following up with the facilities guys. Like right now, the superintendent and his cabinet are reviewing our request because they're like, yeah, we're good with the layout, seems all good. Putting a playground and some courts in that one area west of the parking lot. But and he's like, would you like to own the land? And I'm like, I think the mayor said, sure. We're open to owning land. It's like 0.8 acres. I just said, you know, it's public facilities land. If it's a fair price, you know, we'd be interested. But if there's some other deal where you just want us to work out an agreement, we're okay with that too. Whatever you prefer, you know. So just waiting to hear from them on that. I'll keep you guys updated.
Are you talking to the who that conversation?
So Mike Privet, I think, is over on the facility main guys, and he has a boss. I also, the boss of the principal is Elizabeth Wilson. She's also on the email chain. And
but it's not going to go through the board.
The board and the superintendent are the ones reviewing the request right now. So I summarized, based on our visit, the areas of improvement that we talked about. So if there's anything I missed, let me know. Okay, motor pool. We had some really crazy sales last week. Listed a truck and sold it for $5,000 more than we bought it for 3 years ago. So yeah, these kind of, there's valleys and peaks on these, obviously. Probably could have sold that truck and the RAV4 for a little more, but weren't expecting that. And we just honored their, they offered more than what we were asking, so. Okay. So right now, I guess there's a shortage of vehicles, but we still get our state contract pricing, so it's an advantage for us because we're getting a discounted price without sales tax. And then we sell it for whatever the market is, so. That's how
we've been for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. And we don't have to pay a lot of maintenance because it's a new car. So that's kind of the strategy there. So you can see on the far right column the average monthly cost. We wouldn't be able to get a lease for any of those close to that. You know, they're negative. They paid us to have the Chevy Silverado one time, $127 a month. So that's nice.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and the RAV4 was only $62 a month. I mean, everyone would be like, yeah, I'd do that.
You should have a whole fleet sitting in the city office building.
Yeah, so it'd be nice. If they all sold that easily, Gretchen would be okay with it, but sometimes, some years, she's begging people from Idaho to come. So Here's some highlights. Multiple charges are based on maintenance, insurance, gas, and depreciation. And the charges to other funds this year are decreasing. We're looking at, we have some older dump trucks. We're going to get pricing on replacing them as is, as a bobtail, and also as a Super Duty, like 550. See what the pricing difference is on those. Public Works is also, I already have a cushion in the budget for the lease, but they're negotiating, their skid steer lease is up, and so they're negotiating, so that price could change, but I don't think the budget will change. The vehicles we're planning on replacing this next year, Community Services, that's Greg's department, Building Official, that's Jeff, and Zoning Official, that's one of Jeff's employees, that's Zoning Jenny. Any questions on those funds? So we're required by law to pass a tentative budget. We can change it next month in June, but we're required by law to pass a tentative budget the first Tuesday or earlier every year. So some people think that's unfair. I don't really care. It's fine. So some people like to read like a whole paragraph by writing
that. I guess you don't have to read that stupid paragraph.
We don't need to read it. I'm good to do that. Okay. Highlights, general fund. The main reason why you're going to see the revenues go down is because last year we got the CARE grant. And that's not included this year. The grant from Biden that Mike was talking about is going to show up in water and sewer because that was it's allowed to be used for infrastructure. So that's the plan right now. Last time I saw it was around $1 million, $500,000 this year, $500,000 next year.
Can I touch on that real quick?
Yep.
Yeah, there are some limitations on what we can use that money for. We're still looking for direction, but there's a timeline to spend it. I think it's by 2024, so you have a few years to spend it. The first tranche of money is coming at the end of this month, so we should expect it in a few weeks. But one of the qualified expenses is for use in water, sewer projects, and even fiber. One item that we're seriously considering the proposal to use this money for, and what's our estimate for? Is it 1.4?
Almost 2 million.
No, how much money are we getting? Is it 1.4?
We're getting 1.1.
1.1, excuse me. One of the big items that we're looking at using money for is for secondary meters so that there's not a necessary bond, which allows us to really approach the usage, how people pay for the use of water in a more appropriate manner. But it also, by doing so, there's also reciprocal savings. If there's a reduction in the water consumption, there's also a reduction in our pumping costs. So there's savings to the cities in that matter. Other proposed projects are added storage for water and possibly even a new well. So there's a few items that we're kicking around, and we'll come to the council with a final proposal once we kind of figure out what our staff's recommendation is.
Yes, and Kevin has been working hard at beating down vendors to get the price much better than it was like a year ago. So I appreciate him for doing that.
Is that something that we could use to purchase backup pumps and have them set aside for,
we talked about that.
I think any kind of water infrastructure.
Yeah, we could do that. One of the nice things about looking at something like secondary meters is that there's reciprocal benefits to the city rather than just sitting on a shelf. And that's
not what I'm talking about. I mean, that's not all.
We could spend it all on meters and then still need some more.
The city's eventually going to be required to do meters. And it's a difficult thing, but it's a lot easier when there is a drought to you know, manage it. All right, other highlights. Right now, like Chandler said, we're going to do some transfers in June. The general fund's looking really good right now. Yeah, we have a lot of expenses in May and June. Like, we don't get our all our junior jazz invoices till like May, it seems like. After that, we have a little better idea, but there will be money that we can give, additional money to Class C roads. There's money for these golf renovations that are needed, and also to renew our parks, and so, and if the pricing works out like Kevin hopes on some of these things, then we might be able to do some projects over the next couple of years without debt, which would be great. So, any questions on the budget? Does anyone want to go over any line items? Or do you want to do that another time? Or?
I mean, yeah, the budget's going to change. If anybody has
anything
they've got questions on,
ask
them.
They answered my question.
He answered your question.
Yeah, the regarding the public safety building, there was that line item about funds set aside for building improvements. And mm-hmm. I was just wondering if there was any update on that. And the answer.
Haven't heard anything. You guys heard anything about the fire building?
No. Nothing.
Well, I talked to all of the AF council and mayor when I was down in St. George. They are negotiating it. It's not, still not a done deal.
Okay.
But it's probably going to happen. It's just, it's not the corner anymore.
No, it's a block east.
Yeah.
Or just the parcel next to it, to the east.
So I talked to both the mayor and the council member, and they were about it.
Oh. Yeah. Hopefully for them it's faster than RV Park was for us. Hopefully it's not a 20-year
negotiation. I think we thought it might be functioning by this June, like next month originally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at least sometime next year. Yeah. Originally they thought it would be this April.
Yeah, April. So we remember April, May.
Yeah.
We'll have a permanent
home.
We'll be getting music from downstairs.
There'll be some other ghost in that building, I'm sure.
So I just had a question for my own learning.
Okay,
yeah. So I was curious about the library expense.
Yeah.
I'm a library resident.
So what happens right now is the residents can go to any library, Salt Lake County, Utah County, get a receipt of what the membership is there, and the city gives them a $50 reimbursement, up to $50. So some of them get a partial year, might be less than that, but most libraries now are more than that.
So that's reimbursement for the.
Yeah, and then they just pick the library they like the best.
It's cheaper than having a library.
Yeah,
and something that comes up regularly, something I mentioned to them is just to remind them that everybody of their work pays, last time I looked at credit card, $80 a year. So, their residents are paying it whether they use it or not. Ours are getting reimbursed if they use it, which we're kind of too tiny, but we don't give them a choice. And to me, it's a much better system than asking them to come to the library. So, when they hear that, just they mention it. For some reason, they think the other cities are getting a library for free.
No.
Yeah, libraries are not free.
No.
Chuck, don't look at their line item. Go look at Highland's line item for what they subsidize that the library for.
And what they charge the residents.
Yeah, they have their own money out of the library.
Then they gotta staff it and they gotta keep people, healthy people there, like two or three people all the time. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay.
So We need a motion if you have, don't have any questions.
We have to have public hearing.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. I usually don't. But so, yes, now we will open it up to the public hearing portion of this item. If there's anyone here to speak on that, our looks at my team. Do you want to speak to this item? Adrian? Sorry, I threw you for a loop. I'm sorry. Okay. You're the only audience member. Okay, we're going to move on. It's all right. I don't see anyone here to speak to that item, so we will close the public hearing portion of item number 7, and then I will entertain a motion.
Fiscal year 2021.
Thank you. Councilmember Ellis has made a motion, and another second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Thank you. That makes Councilmember Ellis. So we need a roll call on this. Councilmember Ellis. Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
Councilmember Gettis.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellis.
Aye.
All right. The voting unanimous, that motion passes. Thank you, Charles. All right, I'm going to move on to item number 8. Oh, before we do though, I want to, I made a great mistake. I did not welcome Lieutenant Paul to our meeting. I should have done that beginning.
Totally fine, honey.
Well, we appreciate being here. This is exciting. But we are, we've been appreciative of Lieutenant Christensen. We're happy to have you with us and look forward to a lot of good times at the county meetings.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Now, item number 8, or the item on ordinance amending city code title 10, chapter 5, related to easements and accessory structures.
Thank you, Mayor. So this is a follow-up item from the discussion we had at a previous meeting. What we're proposing here is code that would allow staff a mechanism to work with residents to put permanent structures in these public utility easements, subject to an understanding that the resident recognizes that the public utility easement continues to exist and that all rights associated with the easement continue to exist, whether there's infrastructure in the ground or not. What this is where staff is frequently approached by residents who wish to do something with their yard. It's usually in the side yard or the backyard. Sometimes it's the front, but typically it's in the back. And they want to enhance their property in some manner. But in order to do so, they need to encroach on a public utility easement. Now, public utility easements are generally recorded 10 feet on the front, 10 feet on the back property lines, and they want to put like a pergola or something in the backyard. And in many cases, there's infrastructure in the ground that they would be placing this pergola on. And in many cases, there's nothing there. But nonetheless, that easement exists for the right for public utility providers to use at their discretion. So what we've done is drafted this code. It's run by the city attorney's office. And we've created a form that would allow residents to make an application to basically put a permanent structure in the easement, with the understanding that if a utility provider, whether it's the city, whether it's Comcast, Rocky Mountain Power, Dominion Energy, if they needed to come in, it would be incumbent upon the resident to remove that structure, and the utility provider is in no way, shape, or form required to replace or rebuild that permanent structure. They're doing so at their own risk, so it's kind of an acknowledgement of this. There are some times when a utility provider is required to replace what's there, and that's typically when it's grass, flower bed, or it's concrete, driveway, something like that. Then the utility provider would have to restore what was existing before. But if they're building above and beyond that, then that's upon the resident themselves to make that correction, to replace what was removed. I hope you've had a chance to read through the code. We've added a few definitions for Title 10, Chapter 2, and then Title 10, Chapter 5. We're adding Section 40, which is this easement code. So we're adding code to my master's amending it. But it goes through and directs, it gives it's incumbent really upon the chief building official and the public works director as the people that would evaluate these applications. So if the public works director would know if there is a city utility in the easement, and the public works director can evaluate the structure to see if it is going to damage any of that infrastructure that's there. And sometimes the answer is going to be no. even if there's nothing there, the answer still could be no. But this does give them a way, staff a way, to create a record for that with the understanding that the risk is upon the resident.
So can I ask a question? Because I'm reading 40, and this came up. Someone asked me specifically about this, where it says, no, I just want to say, oh, it says something about setbacks. What was that? Oh, here it is. It's A. It's that 40A. It says location. Any structure, whether permanent or otherwise, placed in an easement area shall be located pursuant to the setback and other applicable requirements of this title. So my question is, so this came up on a house that is on a corner lot.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes our corner lots have...
They have two side streets, so they have setbacks, yes.
And so, like, this person wanted to put their fence out to where the sidewalk is, but the easement or the setback showed that it had to be like 20 feet back. So the city has this big park strip. Does that change that at all?
No. Okay. And let me address you. There's two issues here. One is if it's a fence, there is an optional enclosure. It's called an optional enclosure area in our code. Down on these sides, these corner lots, if they're putting a fence on the side, it has to be 15 feet back of the property line. So you'll see as you drive through the city, it's been intermittently
abused.
Yes. Yeah. So it's sometimes you find it and sometimes you don't. And so it's to keep those clear vision areas open. So as you're approaching a corner, you're not blind
vision triangle stuff, but the ones that are strictly on just the side yard.
Yeah, so
is there any way in that or not?
It's probably something that can be addressed by staff and brought to the Planning Commission and Council. I would think that's the case. If you're looking at just the general structure, yes, the general structure is still subject to the setbacks of the home. So let's say that I want to put in, let's go back to the pergola, right? I can't just put that pergola up to property line so that it drains onto my neighbor's yard. I still have to meet all the setbacks for the location of that pergola, even though it's in a public utility easement.
Okay.
That's what that's saying. But fences is a whole other matter, and it's a, it can be a camp.
Has our Planning Commission addressed it ever? Has it come before the Planning Commission? Because it's never come up here yet on fences. And, I tend to side with the resident on this.
No, Planning Commission's spent extensive time over the last year talking about fences specifically, and the provision of the ordinance that they've been looking at is actually related to privacy fence along the trails. So currently,
well, that's different. That's been around for a while. Yeah, we eliminated that because
the problem with that code is that there's a problem with it.
Cottonwood, Harvey, we changed all those.
We changed it, but the way that the code is written is that it requires an open fence if you live adjacent to a trail.
Right.
And that trail segment has to be less than 30 feet wide and greater than or less than 127 feet long or something like that. So this is a weird arbitrary number. But the only portion of the city's trail system that applies to when you put in those dimensions is from Harvey to Sunset.
Right.
That portion of the trail. So all those neighbors have to have open fencing.
Yep.
Everybody else can put in closed fencing.
Really?
So we've always said that this is a safety issue. So unless we're only having problems between Harvey and Sunset, it's not very well written code. And so we've been trying to address that with the Planning Commission. And it's something that I think we are still going to be addressing with the Planning Commission.
It's in violation of the first.
Yes,
first residents.
Yes, I'm aware.
But it does make some. That's a safety issue. That needs to be considered. And that's probably the most. I don't know if we've ever had it. That's my neighborhood. So I don't know that we've ever had an assault or anything in that corridor.
I don't know.
I'm not aware of anything. But
sort of makes sense. I mean, people that set that up, I don't think they were wrong.
No, no, I think the intention's right. We're way off topic here, but that's fine. So I apologize.
All right, sorry.
But yes, fences. We will bring fences to the council once we get into the planning commission. I can have them address that optional closure if you'd like. We'll talk about it then. We'll come to you.
Anyone have any questions about easements and accessory structures? To approve ordinance 05-04-2021A, adopting City Code Title 10, Chapter 5, Section 40, related to easements, and City Code Title 10, Chapter 2, adopting the definition of easements, subject to no changes. Okay, thank you, Councilman Smith. Would anyone like to second that?
I will second that.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Davis. Councilmember Ellison?
Aye.
Councilmember Schmidt?
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes?
Aye.
Councilmember Ellison?
Aye.
That motion passes unanimously. Thank you. We're going to move on to item number 9. Review action on a resolution stating that City Code intends to participate in the municipal alternative methods pilot project of choice.
Yeah, so the city is required by state law as part of this pilot program for ranked choice voting to provide notice to the county by May 10th if we intend to participate in ranked choice voting or any other alternate voting method that's approved. So far, there's been 7 cities that are going to be participating in ranked choice voting this year: Lehigh, Springfield, Woodland Hills, Goshen, Genola, and then Payson and Vineyard. And Payson and Vineyard is actually their second time. So. As I was thinking about it this afternoon, I thought it's probably indicative of their like for the thing that they stuck with. So I think that does say something. The biggest issue in terms of staff, because either way, we've contracted with Utah County to administer this election. So whatever we do, it's all being done. That's how being handled in the county. All the ballots, the counting, it's all being done in the county. The biggest issue for staff is going to be in resident education, because it is a different way of voting. So it's a matter of getting the word out of what it is and how you vote through it. And fortunately, because we're not the guinea pigs, we're early in the adoption, we'd be early in the adoption of the ranked choice voting system, but there's good resources out there. In the packet, I think we've sent out before the post-it note video, if you've seen that one, where you vote candidates by the color of post-it notes. But there's really great resources out there that you can put out to the residents, and hopefully they tune in to some of these messages and recognize that there's a new voting system if this were to be adopted for this municipal election. With that, there would be new deadlines for the primary or for the general election, so we'd have to make new notice of that. We've put the word out to a few people. They've asked questions about when the declaration period would be. This would be shifted to a new period because there wouldn't be a primary. Part of the reason of possibly going to ranked choice voting is that it does eliminate the need for a primary. You can still do a primary, but given the number of candidates we've had for office in the past few years, I would recommend that if this were adopted, we just go straight to a general election. So we'd have to put those new deadlines up. Part of that is also, it doesn't change our contract with the county, but there would be a savings of probably about $12,000 to $14,000, because that's how much each election would cost. Was, I believe, $225 a ballot, is that what it is?
Per active voter, yeah.
Per active voter that they send out a ballot for. So if you're reducing, if you're getting rid of the primary, and you're cutting your expenses in half for your election. So in terms of, from a staff's perspective, we're looking at education is the biggest issue to residents. As a council, I enjoy discussing your concerns, your thoughts on the matter, as it's your election.
So this came up because I attended one of the seminars at UW, and I think there's some problems with it, but for a municipality probably like ours, I think I have been 100% opposed to it until now. I'm kind of changing my point of view, so I could vote for it if we can save some money. And here's my point. This is the one reason that I think it makes some sense. Having gone through two primaries that actually have a campaign in, nobody's interested in politics in July and August. And it's just, it's a distraction on our city. There's way too many cluttery signs around, mine included. I'm just saying, it just bugs me that we have to have signs out from June to November in a voting year. It trashes up our city. For what? And so that's the only reason that I still think it's not a one vote, one person, one vote thing, but I think it sort of makes sense. So that's my modified take on it from my stance I've had before.
Well, one thing I've heard is also that the elections become much more kind, civil is the word.
Yes, to talk about that.
That's one effect that they've brought up as a natural side effect of trying to be in the voter's top choices. Maybe not number one choice, but the second one. You don't want to alienate it to any others.
It does sort of create a tribal thing where you vote for us three or whatever.
Well, we've had that. We've had that without ranked choice voting.
So I've done a ton of research, and I'm a county delegate. We do RCD there. I hate it. I think it's terrible. I'm completely opposed to it for a number of reasons. My biggest reason is it's confusing. And we have enough times where people vote and they don't think it was fair. They don't think it was ethical. They don't think that it got tallied correctly. We've had that happen to this city where we had to have recount because people didn't think that it was done correctly, and RCD adds to that tremendously because it's so hard to understand. And if you have to have an education piece and have to explain it to people, it's problematic in my opinion. So I'm not for it at all. I think in a city our size, lately the likelihood that we run a primary is going to be pretty small. If I were to do it, it would be only because of money, and I really honestly think that's the only reason that those two cities that you talked about are going to be. I think they have contentious things that go on where they are, and they don't want the primary. And I don't really want to do anything for it. I hate it, but I'll just lay that out there. I'm just gonna say I hate it. And I have done, like I said, a ton of research, and I've participated in it a number of times. And still to this day, I can watch those videos, and it's confusing. And if it's confusing to the candidate and confusing to people who participate, it's confusing to the layperson. So I don't want to have to write up a blog post to explain to somebody why I won or lost. And so that's my thing. But I do think it saves money. I think that's honestly the only reason that. That's more of anything.
I do not follow up what these guys have said. I don't have research like you have, but in a year or two here where our budget's looking pretty good.
Ben, what do you think?
We've had so many presentations on this stuff. This was the one when they went through the issue of ranked choice voting in that last group that had the role method. The issues exist. But from what I saw, every single thing that was presented is incredibly similar to how we already do it, where the top two or top three vote getters get the spot. I don't think we'd have huge issues in the city. I'm neither here nor there. I mean, I don't know why we need to change, other than I like the idea of less signs. I don't see a big change how we actually do our elections.
I'd rather change the sign ordinance. If we're going to talk about the signs, let's say the
signs. To be honest, our sign ordinance when it comes to political science is already very restrictive.
Yeah.
I mean, you could take the Highland approach, which opens up public lands for signs, which I think is the very opposite of what you're intending. But beyond that, our sign ordinance is about as tight as you can be without encroaching on people's ability to express themselves. Because we really say that you cannot put any signs on the city property or public lands. But what you do in your yard is what you do in your yard.
So the reason this is on the agenda at all is because I sat through the exact same meeting at ULCT, although I did it virtually, and listened to their presentation, and I was slightly converted after watching that presentation. I thought that we could bring it here, talk about it, whatever you decide to do is what we'll do.
We have to make it a point of what's up
tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, it's tonight. You have to make a decision tonight.
Because
yeah.
I kind of feel like I'd like to get Brian's opinion.
But you could call a special meeting.
Even how far now. We can also do it next year if you want to. So yeah. We can opt in at any point. If we don't
The pilot program goes up to 2026, so it's not like this is the last option for it, but for this municipal election, it is.
Okay.
But it seems like more cities are jumping in on it.
It's kind of the trend.
So
I don't see a rush for us.
Yeah. I'm kind of good with that too. I would make a motion. Are you making a motion?
Well, it's just a discussion.
No, it's not
a
motion.
I would just make a motion on the table.
Okay.
Yeah, which means it doesn't happen this year.
Right.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay. There's what?
If there ends up not being a primary anyways, you could still do it.
Motion and a second to table it, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Then item number 9 is table. We'll talk about it again next year. All right, we're going to move on to discussion of item number 10 on water conservation.
You know, this is the last thing you want is the PowerPoint on water conservation. There we go. Don't be fast. We've talked a lot about water, so I don't feel like I need to go too in depth. But I do want to talk about, and I apologize, but that's not, it's like almost impossible to read what that says. But I do want to go over that there are three primary sources. And this is taking a very complex water system and breaking it down to like kind of its essentials. So it is more complicated than this, but here's kind of the basic need to knows. One is we have PI sources from three different sources. One is well water. This represents the water that's pumped out of the ground from any of the city's wells. Two is ditch water, and the City of Hills owns water rights with Pleasant Grove Irrigation Company. Even though Pleasant Grove Irrigation Company has multiple sources of water for the company, they have four canyons that drain water out of. We only have the ability to collect water out of the American Four Canyons, so it's our only option. And it's expected this year that the source will be reduced by, in this reading it says 50%, but based on what I'm hearing today, it's actually probably a third of that.
That's what they were saying in our meeting this morning. We're looking at maybe 25% of average.
So we're not a lot of ditch water to count on this year. And finally, the third source of water for the city is the Central Utah Water Project. The city owns 710 acre feet of water this year, and there are some restrictions on our use this year. Our usage this year is actually 555 acre feet of water. This is hard to see. And I apologize for that sound. But this shows our expected source throughout the year. So this bottom is a timeline beginning in May, so we're currently right here. And it's difficult to see, but this orange represents Canyon Well. At the beginning of the irrigation season, we turn on Canyon Well, and we just let that well run. So that's why it's just even. It just pumps all season. Don't turn it off. The blue just above it is Cottonwood Well. And this is one of our culinary wells. And early in the season, we use very little Cottonwood Well. But as the season goes on and the ditch water dries up or becomes less available, we start to increase and ramp up the use of the culinary water to supplement our PI well. And that's why you see Cottonwood Well get heavily used through July and August. The green here, it looks green on my screen. It doesn't look like green on this screen, but it's this middle portion. It's the PG irrigation ditch. That water, this was made with an assumption of 15% reduction. So cut that a little bit, and you'll start to get a sense of where we are. But you see, as the season wears on, that ditch water becomes less available. And then as ditch water becomes less available, that's when we start to dip into our Central Utah Project water. There's two access points to that water. There's a south turnout, there's a north turnout. The south turnout is this darker portion. We take it down by Harvey Park and inject it right into our system, and it comes up and feeds us the lower zone. The north turnout is this lighter gray area, and we take it out down by, again, it's in the retention, the debris basin down here, and it feeds the upper zone, so it gets pumped up to him. So you can see from this plan that we try to not use the Central Utah Water Project water until later in the season, because we rely on that heavily later in the season to be able to get water when we stop using culinary water to supplement our PI and when we don't have as much ditch water. This is a use curve over the last few years. So you can see we have, and there's some misreadings here, so don't look at too much of the detail, because I don't know how we put a few million gallons back into the earth right here, but I think it's when the meter turned over. So it's just a clarifier on a spreadsheet. But you can kind of get a general sense of what our use demand is over the course of the year. Each one of these numbers represents a week of the watering season. And when you have a really wet season, so you remember when we started building Harvey Park, it was just raining all of the time. And so that's this year. So you see this dip down here. So the biggest change to use is actually the weather. It has nothing to do with restrictions we've put on or anything like that. Any guidance from the city is largely ignored over the course. This is what I'm finding over the course of the last few years. The biggest indicator or biggest change factor is going to be change in weather. So then this is kind of the same thing, but just showing a cumulative use over the year. And again, you can see in 2019 we started building Harvard Park. It was wet, so our demand curve didn't take off slight until later in the season. Then when it did, it really matches the same slope as these other years. It just started later. Okay, so this year. So our water conservation plan, this orange represents the acre feet of water used last year in the month. And then what staff is proposing is that everybody reduce their water consumption by 20%. If we can get residents to reduce their water consumption by 20%, and if we can get the city to reduce our water consumption by 20%, we feel confident we can deliver water through the course of the year, through September. We're asking the council to give the direction right now to end the watering season on September 30th, so that October 1st the water system is shut off. So this is the plan. If we can get 20% reduction in use, we're confident we can deliver these services. Again, let me go back to this. So staff's recommendation, residential use, we're asking the residents to reduce their watering by 20%. They can water the same days that we've always watered. But we're asking, if you set your timer at 20 minutes a zone last year, set it at 16 minutes. It's simple changes that you can make that can help us reduce water. The golf course, we're reducing their water consumption by 20% too. They have it, and I'll get into this some more, but actually I'll just wait on that. I'll get into that later. And parks again, we're going to try to reduce our water in here by 20%. And find areas, in the second part of the parks, is that we're trying to find areas throughout the city where we've got grass that we're watering that really is useless grass. So if you drive, we've identified a few areas, and I'll get into that in just a minute too. Well, let's say that we come back at the end of May, and this was last year's usage. The orange gray was this year's goal, and somehow we're not to the goal. Whether it's at 100% of last year's usage or 90%, I don't know. The city council has to make a decision. What do we do? Because at that point, we're starting to say, okay, how do we deliver water the whole year? So what happens next? If usage is reduced by 20%, staff's confident we can deliver these services through September. If usage is not reduced by 20%, we're recommending the following plan. And I will be the first to say I hate it. Right now, our water restrictions are Monday, Wednesday, Friday for odd, I believe, and then Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday for even. We would ask to reduce watering to 2 days per week. Odd house is Monday and Thursday, even house is Tuesday and Friday. On days when watering is not allowed, this is, again, this is, let me just add the footnote here, the caveat that this is the nuclear option. This is what we have to do when we see a real problem on the horizon of not being able to deliver water. On days when watering is not allowed, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, there's certain adjustments that can be made to the system that limit water pressure that make it very difficult to water. Water would still come out of the sprinkler, but just a little bit around the head. So you'll know there's water because they'll have little green spots on them. So
can we do that pretty easily?
Easily, no. Can we do that? Yes.
Okay.
It's like, I don't want to do it.
Right. I mean, I'm just wondering how practical to even say we can do that is.
We can do it.
Okay.
We can do it. I don't want to do it. So that's an option. I'm throwing this out there as like recommendations of staff, and that not that we want to do this. I really don't want to do this. I would rather look at ways to educate residents. Let me get into that right now. Next one. There we go. Resident education. As a staff, it becomes incumbent upon us to do our part to get the word out. And so if residents don't know that there is this situation that not just Cedar Hills, but every community is facing in terms of water conservation and drought conditions that exist this year, that we have failed, that we have not done our part. So what we got to do is we have a few touch points where we can work with residents and get information out to residents. One is the tips and suggestions and the weekly update. Two articles in the monthly newsletter. Three, a dedicated mailing where it's not just white noise lost in a weekly publication or a monthly publication, but an actual mailing sent to residents saying, we've got a problem with water. Four is a notice of violations to include conservation tips. So when we're putting a tag on the door that it says, hey, here's what you did wrong, but here's some things you can do to maybe fix that. And then finally, links to videos on social media and the website. Really put out the word. I know, Mary Anderson, you're part of a video with our adjoining cities on this issue, and I know that was a great effort. There's other resources out there that the state has put out, and I think it's a matter of getting that word out of what the situation is that we're facing. Governor Cox just issued an executive order, I think it was yesterday, about state facilities will not be watering between, I don't want to say it was 10 in the morning and 6 at night. So during the hottest part of the day, the state facilities will not be watering. And he asked me to the municipalities to join us in this effort. And I'll be honest, I'm reluctant to do that because if we are watering at night, we are making it difficult for residents to water at night. If we water our parks, we're reducing the amount of pressure available to other residents. So that's part of the education plan. If you see us watering them during the day, here's why. It's so that you can water at night. You may see the golf course watering at night. They're on a completely separate system. So their use of their pond does not affect the pressures of the city at large. But if we're watering at Harvey Park, at Heritage Park in the middle of the night, it could be making it difficult for the neighborhoods around them to be watering. So let's talk about the golf course. Watering efforts are going to focus on tee boxes, greens, and I'm going to add fairways in that as well and exclude roughs, saying the rough areas outside the fairways are, we may let those go crisp. But with the greens being just an eighth of an inch and tee boxes being maybe a little bit more than that and the fairways being just, you know, a half of an inch, if they're not watered regularly, they burn to a crisp real fast. And so it's just different. But the golf course watering is based on the non-annual allotment. Now, it's not restricted by days. So the golf course doesn't have an odd number address where they can only water Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Their restriction is on their total use. That's what we're looking at here. So if people see the golf course watering every day, it's because there's 120 acres that need to be watered. That's a lot of land. This one is a big challenge that we face every year, and we're going to continue to face it. This year's going to be no different. We have basically two weather systems when it comes to the golf course. The lower nine holes, the lower 10 holes really, is almost a completely different weather system than the upper holes. So you can have winds howling 40 miles an hour up the canyon, and making it very, very difficult to water. And it can be peaceful up here and quiet. We can water just fine up here. So in late August, Councilmember Davis, you've seen it, you start to see these dead spots on the course. And that's because
on holes 10 and 9.
10 and 9 are the big ones. And that's because it makes it difficult to water at night. I'm going to get into what we can possibly do to fix that. The city did, like I said, the Gulf City irrigation system is separate from the city, so its big actions don't affect the pressures in the general city of Orchard. This one of the capital projects that we did this last year was an upgrade to the Toro irrigation system, and we've finally got it up and running. I went and met with, we had some little ugly hiccups, as you probably saw in the chat room. We finally got it up and running. Toro's based out of Texas, and we were supposed to get this up and running in February, but due to the power outage that was there, they were not able to help us, and they got backlogged, and we finally got able to get this system set up. I met with Brian Cloud, our superintendent, last week to talk about what we can do to save water on the golf course. And the new system allows him to dial into the use of each individual head and to adjust the use of it. Just in by looking at what was being used before programmed into the system, in about 15 minutes, he said, I found about 10% reduction just by changing some of the heads. I saw some heads were overwatering, and I changed the timing on those heads so that we could save water. So just in that just a brief overview of the system, he reduced his water consumption by projecting 10%. The second thing that we can do is possibly a weather station. And I got two ideas for this. We have a weather station actually for the golf course that's out here by the big tower area. And it's wired directly into his irrigation system. So the wire goes from the tower, it goes along the fence line here, and comes up to this building. Somewhere it's cut. So there's no direct read, there's no direct connection to the weather station. What they want to do is take that weather station, move it to the bottom 9 holes where we have some unique weather, where we can measure if the wind's blowing 40 miles an hour off the canyon, 50 miles off the canyon, we can not water, not waste that water and just blow it into the wind. We can shut off the system at that point. But it would require him to move that weather station and purchase a wireless receiver so that he can dial it so it's no longer directly tethered. I think that's a worthwhile expenditure. I would also recommend that as we push residents
to... Can they go Wi-Fi on it, or does it have to be recorded?
No, that's what we would upgrade it to, a wireless receiver, so that it's just a direct signal. The next thing would be to, and it's not on this last slide, but it's to maybe invest in a general weather station for the city, where we ask people to get smart controllers, and the smart controllers read off of local weather stations. And I think I maybe mentioned this in a previous council member meeting. I live in Pleasant Grove. I have a smart controller, and the nearest weather station to me is about 5 miles away down by Utah Lake. And the weather here is just so sporadic. I mean, we had a day when the winds were howling and it was raining, and I went home and it was calm and peaceful, and I live in the same zip. So it changes dramatically. So we're asking people to get these smart controllers. I think the most efficient use of them would be to have a local weather station where we could provide real life, accurate weather data for citizens. That's something to consider. Finally, city parks. We're putting all of our parks and retention ponds on smart controllers. The park strips and maybe roundabouts are not on smart controllers. So if you see them being watered during rainstorms, it's because I'm not going to send out a staff member for a few hours to go shut off each battery-operated controller. That's a waste of time. So sometimes inevitably we get the email, if you want to conserve water, why are you watering this watering strip? Well, it's because it's just time. We're sorry. Like I said, park strips and other areas are on battery controllers. We have to change the batteries every year. We do that. But it's not worth the money to put them on smart controllers. So inevitably, the email will come, and I'm just telling you why those are on during rainstorm. We will continue to install rain delays on all systems. We're going to move in that direction. And then, like I said, parks will be reducing watering by 20%. And then Kevin has done an excellent job of finding areas where we can convert grass to hardscape. And the four areas that we're going to target in the upcoming years, maybe clear it's years, not months, is the park strip, the median on 4600 in front of the Charleston. It's just grass, and it's in the middle of the road. It doesn't serve a purpose. We can take that grass out and put in pavers or hardscape. That can still look nice, look classy, match the crosswalk that's there, but do so and conserve water. Another area is as you enter the city on the south end of Canyon Road, there's the rock area. This is Welcome to Cedar Hills. Just to the south of that entrance is grass owned by the city. Again, it's grass. It's not used for anything other than the visual aesthetics of it being existing. And then it runs up the Canyon Heights Drive. So it's a matter of removing that landscaping and putting in either some native vegetation or something else. Could be hardscape again. Could be rocks to match the other side. Another area is the roundabout here as you approach the clubhouse. And we've talked over the years about putting in a xeriscape garden there to kind of give residents an idea of what we mean by xeriscape. That it's not just letting our yards go to weeds, but it actually includes some sort of landscaping. But that's an area where we can lead out, I think, in a manner that's exemplary. And then the fourth area is, Evan, help me out.
The roundabout on Cedar Hills Drive.
So we've upgraded the center of that, but there's still some things we could possibly do around the outer portion. And as we talk about the traffic modifications to Cedar Hills Drive, as we tackle that project, as you, if you recall, we may want to have it, if we install a new roundabout down on 4700, we may want to have it match in some manner to the roundabout that's on 4600 so that they look like they're tied together. So those are some areas that we're looking at, possibly reducing our city's watering obligations in a way that's still aesthetically pleasing for the city. I don't think it would detract from, I think, what the beauty of Cedar Hills is. I talked on and on about water. I apologize. Any questions?
When can we get the weather station for residents?
I can have staff look into that as soon as you want. I honestly don't know what it will cost. You can probably go on very cheap, but I think if it's something that's public and that's owned by the city and put out to the public to tie into, I think you have to at least have a professional quality.
Yeah.
So I have a quick question with regards to, are we still subsidizing our residents for the smart village?
No, we've never subsidized them. That's through Central Utah. That's
right. Central Utah.
What we do is, if you have a smart controller, you can register with the city, and then we no longer
don't care what day
we don't care what day you watering. Now, if we go to severe watering restrictions, the council is going to have to decide how that changes.
Because I do have a smart one, and I feel like it overwaters. It's supposedly good one. It's a beehive. It's one of the ones that was approved and everything. I still feel it overwater. What it does is it waters multiple times a day, so it's smaller, which is the right thing to do. You don't have to go through a program individual agency. It just kind of does it automatically. But I feel like it still waters. So maybe I was thinking about, there's a percentage on there you can put. Maybe I'll go like 8% or something, so I'm saving 20%.
Everyone's different. I have a ratio at my house, and I don't know that it has that kind of option.
It does.
Does it? I haven't looked into it that much.
You have to go way down into the advanced details. I was just looking at it.
I have not done that, so I'll have to go check that out.
Yeah.
But so on people that have the smart controllers, it's not simply just setting your controller. It's also, it sounds like, diving into the nuts and bolts of the
details. Yeah, you have to dig into it, unfortunately. So,
that's good.
But also, I think kind of, is Central Utah still doing it, or is it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Still
as long as the money's available.
The rebate is less.
It used to be like 50 or 80 last year.
So I think the natural fall to this discussion is we're going to watch the water through May. And then when we have June, the first meeting in June, I think it's going to be the appropriate time to update the council and say, here's where we are. And then we can make a call and send these restrictions.
I tend to agree with you in your first comment that whole graph is all shown on weather. It's really, we can say all these things and it just doesn't always,
it's going to
have very little effect on our water usage.
So pray for rain.
Anyone who's will have it in 1982 again.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's it. We added an item.
We did add an item.
Yeah, I'd like to propose that we go into closed session pursuant to Utah State Code 52-4204 and 52-4205, C and E, to discuss pending or reasonable imminent litigation and discuss the sale of real property.
Do I have a motion by Councilmember Ellsworth? Do I have a second?
Second.
My pitch to our Councilmember Geddes has made a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
Could I request that we need to stay in?
Yeah, oh, we have to do a roll call?
Go with it.
Councilmember Ellsworth? We can do a roll call.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith. Aye. Councilmember Geddes. Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. So we are moving to closed session, and I think everyone's.
Okay, you have to give me a minute, because I have to set up another recording here.